next week.
You're listening to CGSF 90.1 in Burnaby, British Columbia.
Hello, this is Rabble Radio, recorded on Friday, January 23rd, 2026. I'm your host, Breanne Doyle. Rabble.ca shares the news of the day through a progressive lens. If you're curious about what's happening in Canadian politics, labor, the environment, and beyond, you've come to the right place. This is news for the rest of us. Thanks for tuning in. This week, the World Economic Forum annual meeting was held in Davos, Switzerland, under the theme of A Spirit of Dialogue. On Tuesday, January 20th, Canadian Prime Minister Mark Carney delivered a 17-minute special address in which he condemned the old order of the world and said the long-standing American-led rules-based international order is over. He called on middle powers, such as Canada, to work together and resist domination by larger, wealthier, and more heavily armed nations. The reaction to Carney's speech from Canadians has been overwhelmingly positive. Across the political spectrum, many have praised Carney's speech for its measured, inspiring tone and for firmly positioning Canada in opposition to the actions of U.S. President Donald Trump without ever mentioning him by name. This response is hardly surprising, as last year's election showed, few things currently unite Canadians as effectively as drawing a clear line against Trump and his actions. But should progressive Canadians be so quick to celebrate Carney's speech? What was left unsaid beneath the polished rhetoric? Which elements rang hollow or hypocritical, and which genuinely deserve recognition? Today on the show, Rabble publisher Sarah Sahagian and Rabble editor Nick Seabrook discuss the speech and what it might mean for Carney's plans in the year ahead. Here are Sarah and Nick in conversation. Take a listen.
Hi, this is Nick Seabrook, editor of Rabble.ca. I'm here with our publisher, Sarah Sahagian. And Sarah, thanks so much for joining me. It's been a really big week in news, and the year is off to an interesting start.
Boy, is it ever. That's an understatement. So, I mean, I think today we decided to convene because so much has happened and we wanted to discuss the news. So, Nick, what is first on your agenda?
Well, of course, there was Mark Carney's speech at the World Economic Forum in Davos, Switzerland, which took place this week. It was, I think, a very significant speech. It's going to be remembered as probably one of the most significant speeches made by a prime minister, either to a domestic or to a world audience, I think, in recent memory. Probably something more significant, I think, you know, than anything, unfortunately, Trudeau ever said. There's not very many speeches that Trudeau gave on the national stage that I think will really stick as well as this speech this week will stick in the minds, both here at home and around the world.
Absolutely. So for me, I was watching this with interest. So I am somebody who, in addition to being a journalist, I have a public speaking background. I have run a public speaking nonprofit that was devoted to teaching kids at public school debating public speaking. I have taught debating public speaking around the world. So I was curious to hear this. I have previously thought Mark Carney was not a good public speaker. He's quite lifeless. He's not very expressive. He doesn't seem like somebody who has any training, is what I'm trying to say, which is interesting because I'm sure he has had training with the high profile career he's had. I'm sure people have tried to teach him, and that's kind of the best he could do. This time, at least for the first half of the speech, I thought he leveled up. It seemed like he cared. He seemed a bit impassioned. But as we're going to discuss, because I know you took careful notes and you have a lot of issues, the level of rhetoric, because as we were talking before this recording, it was very reminiscent of speeches in World War II, the level of rhetoric. And I agree with him that this is a turning point in history, that the old world is over. I agree with that sentiment. But the moral high ground is what is very interesting. And for sure, Canada at the moment, in comparison with the US, has the moral high ground. But it is this very interesting glossing over of a lot of problems that are happening in Canada and a lot of the history of us saying nothing about America just trampling on human rights around the world, right? He doesn't really hold us accountable for that. He's just like, well, we used to do that because it was convenient. Let's stop.
Yeah, let's get into the words that he said a little bit. And so he talked about, like you said, the end of the old rules-based order. And as a part of that, he highlighted that that rules-based order didn't always apply equally, depending on the status of the country. And he never mentioned the United States. He never mentioned Donald Trump, but he was clearly referencing times in world history since the end of World War II, where the U.S. has gotten involved in the affairs of other countries, has toppled governments, has invaded, thinking of Vietnam. And, you know, he said that, you know, now we are seeing the end of that now being applied more broadly, in terms of great power politics, of great powers using middle powers as chips to advance their own interests. And I think for some people watching this, they noted that, well, Canada didn't really say much during the Cold War when the U.S. was going around Latin America and Africa and toppling leaders that they didn't like. And now that Canada is very much in the crosshairs and is very much subject to that great power game of being threatened by great power with territorial ambitions, now it's, you know, it seems a little bit like, well, better late than never, I think is what our parliamentary reporter Carl Nirenberg said in his piece on Mark Carney's speech, which is now up on rabble.ca.
Yeah, I mean, I think definitely better late than never. I'm glad he did say something. However, it will be interesting to see what happens going forward. Is he going to now collaborate with other countries that also have poor human rights records, right? We know that, for example, he's creating a trade deal with Qatar that has one of the worst human rights records in the world. And he's touting that he wants to have a closer relationship between Canada and Qatar.
And he just concluded a major trade deal with China, right? And China doesn't exactly have the greatest human rights record either, whether throughout its long-term history or its more recent history. More recently, Canada voted unanimously in the House of Commons. Every single MP, you rarely see this, non-binding resolution in the House of Commons a couple of years ago, where they voted that China was committing genocide against its Uyghur population. So, like you said, you know, it's a shift from the sanitized crimes of the United States to other more unsavory actors around the world.
Yeah. So what I think is interesting is that the first part of the speech, and actually throughout it, he's kind of heralding this as like, we're not going to take the U.S. abuse of countries around the world and people around the world anymore. It's this moral high ground. But he also very much makes it clear, like, we're open for business with everyone else who wants to do business with us as long as they respect sovereignty.
And I just want to lay out that vision that he talked about a little bit, because he so often in these speeches, they're very aspirational. They're very high level talk about things that they feel that the speaker feels the world should be. And in this speech, Carney did lay out a little bit about what he saw as the new world order, to use a tinfoil hat kind of a phrase. But how Carney kind of laid things out was, he said he saw middle powers like Canada, like those powers of Europe, joining together for their own cooperation, for their own protection from the great power game. He talked about the tendency for great powers to play these nations off of one another, and that will lead to nations becoming islands and becoming fortresses and poorer for it and having less sustainable economies. This was also all in relation to the deep integration, global integration that we've seen across the world between the U.S. and other countries, whether it's militarily or economically, just really deep levels of integration that are now, Carney explained, being used against the nations who went along with that globalization.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, listen, what he says is he's walking a fine line. He talks about how he's looking for partners that share enough common ground to act together. He doesn't fully define what that means, right? He doesn't have a bar for human rights. He doesn't have a bar for democracy or anything like that. Having said that, Canada does not have a perfect human rights record at all. Canada has as many would argue, lots of problems domestically. So yes, we don't want to hold anyone to a higher standard than we hold ourselves, although we would argue that we should probably hold ourselves to a higher standard just for the sake of that. He talks about how he doesn't want to compete with each other for favor, right? Which I think is the important part. And it's obviously clear the entire time he's talking about the US. It's very interesting. It's kind of when you go on a screed on Instagram about your ex-boyfriend, but you don't name them, right? Someone did me wrong. Someone did this. Someone was emotionally abusive. Someone did this. Someone did that, right? It's very much like that. Trump knew who he was talking about, obviously, and his reaction was pretty negative to the speech. Fair enough. His reaction to criticism is always negative. That's to be expected. And the truth is, the interesting thing about getting a negative reaction from Donald Trump is he would react just as negatively to a minor tweet as he would to this speech. So you might as well give a speech that just burns it all down, because he's so sensitive and has no sense of proportion. But then Carney goes into this next phase of the speech where he really talks about Canada's resources, and it's an advertisement for investing in Canada, right? He says Canada has what the world wants. He talks about us as an energy superpower and critical minerals. And so he makes it very clear, in my opinion, if you read between the lines, that what he's envisioning is not really a green economy, right? He's not envisioning an evolution that steps away from late capitalism. He's just envisioning, let's do late capitalism and be less dependent on the United States. This is what I take from the speech. What about you?
Yeah, absolutely. Very much not moving towards those ideas of how we can be greener, how we need to get away from fossil fuels. I think we saw this going all the way back to the election last year. There does not seem to be an appetite for that from Mark Carney. It just seems to be what he knows is the extraction industry, and he's going to continue pushing on that. That's been some of the most significant hallmarks of his premiership so far. The pipeline deal with Alberta being, of course, the most notable example of that. So I think now he's saying to other countries around the world, like, we are able to do this on a global scale. This is what our market is, and we're not really going to be changing it.
Yeah. I mean, he even refers to the investment power of our pension plans. Like, it gets pretty dry and pretty granular at points, right? I mean, he's basically invoking the Ontario Teachers Pension Plan, things like that. So he's very much saying, we are the capitalists you can rely on, right? America has become a country that, and I, like, listen, they're so into tariffs and they're so protectionist, I don't even know if they're practicing capitalism the way any economist who believes in capitalism would envision it, right? They don't. But I think what's happening now is Mark Carney, who's somebody who's led two central banks, is really trying to, in my opinion, establish himself as a leader for the capitalist world that believes in free markets, and to establish himself as, I mean, the man for this crisis moment. I understand why Canada wants soft power here. We want influence. We want clout. And I do think the speech is going to get him influence and clout. It's whether or not we think, as progressive Canadians, that this is the direction we want the country to go in.
Well, as progressive Canadians, just talking about the capitalist economic system and what you mentioned about, is the U.S. practicing capitalism the way people envision it, or the way you're supposed to? They are. It is a finite continuum, the progress of capitalism through society. And I think you're seeing that in the U.S. It came out this week that the richest billionaires in the U.S. own $38 trillion, which is more than, I think, a large segment of the U.S. population, like something like well over 50%. You can't combine all their assets together and reach that amount. There are four major investment banks on Wall Street. Of the S&P 500 stock exchange, those investment banks own a majority share in about 90% of the stocks listed on that exchange. So you're seeing a greater and greater concentration of wealth. You're seeing in Canada, Mark Carney not really recognizing that and moving away from that. And I think that is part of the problem. You know, we need to have an economic system that supports equity and encourages, you know, people to have access to the necessities of life and being able to grow in the way that they want to grow as individuals. And I think continuing but that upward push of wealth further up to the higher end of society is not going to encourage that.
No, I mean, I completely agree with you. I think where I was saying that it's uncertain whether the U.S. is actually following capital's values as they were historically envisioned. It's not that. I do agree. Obviously, they believe in money, for sure. There have been interesting critiques by people like, actually, I know her and I went to high school with her, Denise Hearn, who's studied capitalism, who would argue that what America has is actually not even capitalist. There's not sufficient competition. Workers don't have sufficient bargaining power. It's not really what was initially envisioned, that even capitalism is supposed to be better than what the U.S. has now, right? Whether you like capitalism or not, what they have is this distortion. And I guess that's what has come to be known as late capitalism.
Yeah, and to get off of this capitalist tangent, just to get back to Carney real quickly, he, like we said, he laid out a vision for the future of the world about cooperation amongst middle powers to avoid them being used as pawns by the great powers to be exploited. And it sounded to me very much like in the 1950s and 60s during the Cold War, this is where the term third world comes from. There was the first world, which was the capitalist world, the second world, that was the communist world, and then the third world, which has unfortunately become known as the world of poverty and deprivation, but at the time was simply to describe countries that were non-aligned. It was the non-aligned movement, not aligned with either of the superpowers. And it sounded very much to me like that was kind of the world that Carney was encouraging. And we saw, I think, during the Cold War that that didn't really work too well for a lot of the countries, that the great powers, the two superpowers at the time, were able to isolate the third world and divide it up fairly effectively. So I think that is an interesting idea that he brought forward. It's not necessarily a new idea, and it's just looking at history, it's hard to say where that will go in the 21st century.
Well, I mean, he didn't really commit to very much. It's a very vague speech. It is full. I mean, I would say that it's in some ways a work of sophistry, which other people might say is critical. And I do think when I watched it, it did have an inspirational tone. And I saw lots of people, including people who I know vote NDP or Green, say that they thought it was a great speech. So it definitely hit a chord for a lot of people who I guess wanted to see a patriotic speech, wanted to feel that way. But it doesn't really lay out a plan. However, what is implied, as you mentioned, and I mean, as we talked about, is something that I think in the long run, progressive Canadians are going to have an issue with. And I think when we say, oh, we didn't know he meant that we were going to go this other way on our own, we're going to be middle power and this is what it would look like, I feel like there it's actually implied what it's going to look like, with the emphasis on the capital we have for investment, with the emphasis on us as an energy superpower who have critical minerals. I think it's all, it's not clearly laid out, but I think there's enough there, right? There's enough there that you can read between the lines.
Now, you mentioned that people, kind of across the political spectrum in Canada, found Carney's speech to be, a bit inspirational. It was received fairly favorably here at home. But of course, the cynics will say actions speak louder than words. Carney talked about moving, didn't mention the U.S., talked about moving away from the U.S., talked about the end of the old rules-based order, talked about abuses during that old rules-based order against countries and peoples who were powerless effectively. But then he turns around and agrees to join Donald Trump's Gaza Peace Board. This is a organization being put together by Donald Trump and by Israel and by former UK Prime Minister Tony Blair. And it will be managing the reconstruction of Gaza, quote unquote, but it's going to be doing so without any popular support or input from the Palestinians living there, which obviously just kind of feels like that old world order that Carney was saying was dead, he's agreeing to participate in after talking about the abuses the world is receiving from Donald Trump. He's now going along with potentially one of those significant abuses that continues to happen against the Palestinian people. And that's not even to get into the fact that it might just be a whole grift, because Donald Trump is raising the prospect of having members of the Peace Board pay a fee for the honor of being there.
Absolutely. And it's quite a high fee that he wants us to pay for the honor of being on his board that will likely do absolutely nothing to help the Palestinian people. So it is interesting. I mean, Listen, this is how a lot of people do statecraft. And it is interesting to see it play out in real life. In World War II, a lot of people did similar things. You know, your speeches didn't necessarily reflect what you were, your decisions and what you were doing. And this is also a critical time in history. It remains to be seen whether it is as much of a turning point as the Second World War. Knock on wood, let's hope it's not. Let's hope that the situation doesn't get that bad. I don't think anyone is rooting for that. But I do think that when we watch a speech like this, we need to have media literacy. And we need to watch it critically and realize, as you said, actions speak louder than words, right? And also, even some of his words, if you really just take a second to think about them, very much mean that he's not taking Canada in a particularly progressive direction. So I don't know if this is a speech that I think that everybody should uniformly be approving of. And I approve of some of the parts of it. I do approve of condemning the United States and their current actions. I do approve of that. But as Carl said, better late than never. Still late, though. We could have done this a while ago. And even when Carney became prime minister, he could have done this in a full-chested way. I mean, I can't criticize him for Stephen Harper not doing enough or Justin Trudeau not doing enough. But certainly, Carney has been prime minister for almost a year, and he hasn't really said these things earlier.
Yeah, and absolutely. And I think an important action that Carney can take is one here right at home and ensuring that people are not left behind by an economic system designed to concentrate wealth in the hands of the few. And doing that in terms of supporting important social programs, doing that in terms of ensuring that the very wealthiest of us are paying their fair share in taxes, and also moving importantly away from fossil fuels. It is an underlying crisis that is not going to go away no matter what other crises Donald Trump creates.
Absolutely. I mean, another thing I would like to see is I would like to see a more just framework for Canada's migrant workers. I know a lot of Canadians are really horrified about what ICE is doing, and obviously, it is horrifying. There is no excuse for it. It is disgusting. It is happening to people who are undocumented. It's happening to people who are documented. It's even happening to American citizens, to Indigenous people. It's awful. They are in the early stages of a genocide, it looks like. And let's pray that that doesn't happen or hope that that doesn't happen. But Canada also needs to look in the mirror and realize that there is a lot of exploitation of racialized people. There's a lot of exploitation of migrant workers who work on our farms, care workers who work with our loved ones. And that is something that I think we should take a moment to work on right now. We should take inspiration from this outrage that we feel and try to help the people who are currently being exploited in this country. I know we don't have an equivalent of ICE, but that does not mean things are perfect.
Absolutely. And we're going to have to leave it there. But I think it's a great conversation. As we said at the top, you know, and as is said frequently, we're living in unprecedented times. And it's very important, I think, for Rabble to be able to have these discussions, host these discussions, share content from a wide range of writers who are able to comment and give analysis on the times that we're living in. If you want to support the work that Rabble does, please visit rabble.ca/donate. Sarah, thanks so much for being here with me today.
That was Rabble publisher Sarah Sahagian and Rabble editor Nick Seabrook in conversation. Thanks so much for that, Sarah and Nick. And now, this is our In Case You Missed It segment, where we review the top stories from this week on Rabble.ca. Here again is Rabble editor Nick Seabrook. Back to you, Nick.
Thanks, Brianne. Starting this week with national news. In an op-ed on Rabble, Bianca Mugiani, who has applied to be a candidate in the NDP leadership race, took aim at party leadership, saying that their restrictive rules would have prevented trailblazers like Rosemary Brown from running if she were a candidate today. Rosemary Brown was a BC NDP MLA who became the first Black woman to run for the leadership of a federal party when she ran in 1975 in the NDP leadership race. In the piece, Mugiani lauds Brown as someone who was unafraid to be critical of the party leadership for policy decisions that they made, and therefore argues the current leadership of the NDP would have disqualified Brown if she ran today. Muccianni's husband, Eve Engler, was barred from running for the NDP leadership by the three-person leadership vetting committee. And one of the several reasons given was because he was critical of the party. As for Muccianni, her candidacy application has yet to be approved by the leadership committee. Also in national news, two candidates in the NDP leadership race each received major endorsements this week. Heather McPherson received the endorsement of former NDP MP Charlie Angus. Angus, who also ran for the party leadership in 2017, said that McPherson was the best choice to be leader in these uncertain times. Fellow leadership candidate Avi Lewis also received an endorsement last week from sitting NDP MP Leah Gazan. Gazan said that Lewis could offer the party hope and help rebuild its grassroots base after the disastrous 2025 election. Gazan was notably critical of McPherson when she launched her campaign. During her opening campaign speech, McPherson said that the party needed to do away with so-called purity tests. In a response made at the time, Gazan said that she was appalled that such language was often used to dismiss marginalized groups. Also this week, the Kurdish diaspora in Canada and around the world held protests calling for our nations to intervene in Syria. The new Syrian government is allegedly assaulting and killing members of the Kurdish population in that country. Ethnic Kurds live in parts of Syria, Turkey, and Iraq and have been victims of targeted violence from the governments of those countries at different times in recent history. During a protest held in Vancouver, organizers said that with the support of the government of Turkey, Syria was forcibly displacing Kurds from their homes. Protesters called on the Canadian government to provide support for Kurds and Kurdish refugees who have been displaced. And finally, in environmental news, writer and activist David Suzuki shared a tribute to fellow environmentalist Jane Goodall. Goodall died in October of last year at the age of 91. Suzuki said that Goodall was an environmentalist and scientist who helped to break down the barriers between humanity and nature, especially through her legendary work with chimpanzees. By demonstrating how chimpanzees socialized and used tools in ways similar to humans, Suzuki said it showed how closely humanity was related to the natural world. And as always, you can read the full version of all the stories we talked about today on Rabble.ca.
And that's it for Rabble Radio this week. Thank you, as always, for tuning in. If you like the show, please consider subscribing to Rabble Radio on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts. If you have feedback for the show, ideas, stories, opinions you'd like us to cover, we'd love to hear about it. Get in touch with us anytime at editor@rabble.ca. Thank you to all the journalists and writers who contributed to this week's content on Rabble.ca, and thank you to Carl Nirenberg for supplying the music. Lastly, thank you to you for tuning in to Rabble Radio. I'm Brianne Doyle, and I'll talk to you next week. Thank you.
You're listening to